one.
What up, what up, what up, everybody, and welcome. This is the Ultimate Patriots Dr. Football Podcast. How everybody doing tonight? I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien. Joining me as always, the CEO of Hedge Better, Justin Fine. I am recording remote tonight. I'm somewhere in the Caribbean Sea on a Royal Caribbean cruise, and the Wi-Fi on this ship has been really good so far, so I hope that keeps up for tonight. Justin, what's going on, man? We got a lot to talk about.
We do. Got a lot to talk about. Wild card weekend coming up. Season went by pretty quickly, man. I'm not going to lie. I feel like we really blinked did. and we got the playoffs on the horizon.
Yeah, playoffs on the horizon, coaching carousel, Black Monday, as they call it, Obviously always went bananas, tons of coaching moves that we can break down. But as always, we're going to start in Foxborough, talk about the Patriots and what happened in Foxborough last Sunday against the Miami Dolphins and take a look ahead at this postseason. So let's get into it, man. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. Let's do it. There's not much to talk about. That's the reality about this game on Sunday. I thought it was boring game. I thought it was totally vanilla. I thought that the Patriots kind of went into it half throttle.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's great that they still won 38-10, but I felt like it was one of those things where they were happy if they won the game, but they didn't want to fully sell out to win the game.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely did start a little bit slow. And I think they probably got a fire lit under them, at a certain point, because they did turn it around. But it just struck me as just one of those like low effort required to go in there and get a win type of games. Like, as long as they just didn't screw it up, they were going to go in there and they were going to win that game. Like, they were clearly like such a better team, more well-coached, more talent. And they really just needed to go in and handle business. They didn't need to do anything special or extra to win that game.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. I mean, they were just such a superior team to Miami that it was like, just show up and don't totally barf the game away.
Right.
And you're walking away with a dub. And that's exactly what happened. You know, I do think there were a couple of noteworthy things from the game that we can bring up. So we'll get into that. Number one is, I mean, look, one of the stars of the game, and really one of the stars of, I'd say, the last four-ish weeks of the season, has been Ramondre Stevenson, Justin.
Yeah, I know.
And I want to know, you've been predicting the big fumble to come. We're heading into the postseason. It hasn't happened yet. You know, where are you on Ramondre Stevenson right now? And are you ready to fully take medicine on that? Or are you just, what are we going to see from this guy in the postseason?
No, you know, I'm not ready to fully take medicine. I will say this. I'll preempt that by saying that, I've been super impressed with Ramondre Stevenson lately. I think he's been extremely valuable. He's played very well, both on the ground and through the air. He's really, really proven himself, I think, in terms of, being able to come back and be an asset for this team, right? He's been great. So I can't complain about the way he's played at all, especially the back half of this season. I think he's actually been one of the better running backs in the NFL. But what I would say to that is, despite everything he's done as of late, if he has a big mistake in the playoffs, or if that ugly tendency, rears its head again in a crucial moment, I'm not going to care about all of the good things he's done the last few weeks or the last few months. Like, that will all be in the past. It'll be, what have you done for me lately? And I need to see him continue this performance in the playoffs. I can't risk, this team can't risk that he makes a crucial mistake at a crucial spot. So again, if he does something to potentially lose us a playoff game, I'm not going to give a crap about what he's done the last few weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I think the key, I agree with that 1,000%. And it's like one of those things where it's just like, you feel like he's due given his track record. He's right. He's been a fumbler his whole career.
Yeah.
So like the fact that he's gone this long without fumbling, it just does make you a little nervous, I think, heading into the playoffs. But I really think the key for Ramondre Stevenson is very simple. And that is, you really have to not give him the ball more than like 15 times a game.
Right.
The more you rely on this guy, the more likely it is that he's going to fumble. Like, he is a classic platoon back. And in that role, being that platoon back, it brings the best out of him. And you've seen that the last month. But and that kind of dovetails with the emergence of Travion Henderson, who can take 15 to 20 touches a game. And that way you don't have to count on Stevenson. But the second they rely on this guy to be like a bell cow back, that's when he's going to burn you, because that's what he's done his whole career.
Exactly. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we talked about at the beginning of the year, you know, how slow of a start Travion Henderson had and how little the team was getting out of him, including his usage, not just his production. And that, coincidentally enough, was when Ramondre was having issues, right? So once you kind of reduced his workload and reduced the expectations, that's really when he's been at his best. So, you know, we've said that. I think as long as he can just play a role but not be the guy that needs to be leaned on, I think he'll be fine. But with that being said, like, you know, I'm never going to not worry in a big game that he's going to do something that can potentially cost us in a big moment.
Right. He has such a track record. I think he's just one of those players. You're always going to have that in the back of your head.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the quarterback, Justin. Drake May, second season. Let's think back to August when we're talking about what we wanted from Drake May this year. And there was so much talk about like second year leaps. And the reality is that May exceeded those expectations. He had an absolutely amazing second year, to the point now where he is one of the two leading candidates for MVP. What I want to know from you, Justin, is did Drake May do enough to win MVP? You know, his performance on Sunday, I thought was kind of, I mean, I didn't think they asked a lot of him. I think they tried to protect him a lot. I don't think they really wanted that big game from him, because I think they didn't want him to get hurt in the last game. All that said, he did take a few hits. The reality is now we have 17 games in the books. You've seen what he's done. You've seen what Matt Stafford done. Who is the MVP, Justin, in your opinion?
You know, I do think it's a close one, right? But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Outside of passing touchdowns, doesn't Drake May have Matt Stafford beat in almost every other relevant category for a quarterback, including setting some records, you know, off the top of my head, I forget exactly what they were. I think it was like he's the first quarterback in NFL history to pass for 4,000 yards, have a 70% completion percentage, and rush for over 400 yards, something like that. So it's like he's not only setting records, but I think he has Stafford beat in everything besides passing touchdowns. So including his team's performance, he's leading a number two seed into the playoffs versus Matt Stafford's wild card.
That's a big one. A big one, because every NFL MVP in the last like 15 years has come from, I think, either number one or number two seed.
Yes, exactly. So if you're going to ask me, has he done enough? I would say, yeah, he's done enough. He hadn't. Yeah. Now he hasn't done enough to not make it a conversation, or he hasn't done enough that if Matt Stafford wins, that I'll be beside myself and won't be able to fathom how it happened. But he's done enough to win it in my eyes.
Yeah. I guess the thing to me is I want Drake May to win it. I think Drake May is going to win it, because I think the voters love the shiny new thing. Yeah. I think that's something we've seen before. And I think they will factor in some of those quality stats. And I think the third thing is the number one seed, number two seed thing is a big thing. I don't think they're going to give the MVP to a number five seed. All that said, if I had a vote, I would vote for Matt Stafford. You know, I'm a Patriots fan through and through, and I want May to get it, but I just can't get past the fact that Matt Stafford, you know, threw 46 touchdown passes this year, had a bunch of four touchdown games, a bunch of 300 yard games. I mean, May only had one 300 yard game. He had, I think, one 4 touchdown pass game in this whole season. Like, as much as I want him to do it, the other thing is the schedule the Patriots played was really easy. That's a factor too. You know, add it all up. And if I was really being objective and honest, then I would have to vote for Matt Stafford.
And I get it. That is an argument. You know, when it comes down to the schedule, though, the one thing I did see is I think when you look at the common opponents between the Rams and Patriots, between the common opponents, Drake May was 6-0 and Stafford was 4-2. Right. And so that's something where, you know, and I think May's stats were just as good, if not better, than during that 6-game stretch. So if we're going to talk about the schedule, I think that needs to be mentioned right alongside the strength of schedule. You know,
I mean, that's the counter argument, and that's why this vote is going to be so close, because I think that, you know, like, you could make a reasonable argument for either one of these guys, and I think that the reality is that most of the voters are going to look at it very simply, and they're going to say, I have two guys I could make a case for. I'm going with the guy that was on the better team. And I think that's why May will probably win it, combined with the fact that, as I said, everyone loves the new thing. And Drake May right now is the new thing. But when I, you know, having watched Tom Brady win a few MVPs and seen, you know, some of the other MVP seasons I've seen in other franchises, do I think Drake May had a true MVP season in the traditional sense of the word this year? I really don't. I just didn't really see enough of those, like, big bonanza games where he, like, literally carried this team to victory. He played great consistently the whole year, but I just didn't see that kind of true production that I think we've always gotten from typical MVPs in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I think when, you know, May is, I think, almost one of those rare cases where, you know, sometimes, you know, the eye test doesn't line up with what you see on paper, right? And I feel like with May, I mean, as good as he played, you know, like you said, there weren't a ton of games where he wowed us maybe and blew us away in the same way that Matt Stafford did. But when you look at the guy's stats on paper, like, it's very impressive, right? So I feel like there's a discrepancy between, like, you know, the stats and the tail of the tape with this guy.
Yeah. There is. And, you know, the other thing that I think voters will consider, and I know I'm playing both sides of the fence here, but is the fact that Matt Stafford has much better weapons 100%. Around him. And, you know, if you're going to make an argument for Stafford, it's going to begin with he threw 15 more touchdown passes than Drake May. But how many touchdown passes would May have thrown if he was throwing to Devonta Adams and Puka Nacua, you know, in that offense? I mean, I think that's a fair argument too.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, look, not to mention, you know, you talk about the weapons too, but the coaching staff. I mean, Stafford's been in that system for years now. He's had McVay in that coaching staff, you know, for a while. Right. There's continuity. Everything about Drake May's second year was new for him, from some of his main weapons to his head coach to his offensive coordinator. It was all different for him. So the fact that he did what he did with as much change that went on around him, I think is something that can't be ignored either.
Yeah, 1,000%. That's a check mark in May's favor. So we won't know until the week before the Super Bowl when they do the week of the Super Bowl weekend when they do that stupid award show that nobody watches or gives a shit about. Yeah. But, you know, we're interested to see. The last thought I'll say about this is that, to me, I would love it if there was a way that they could delay the voting until we saw what happened in the postseason. Because I would say that if you're kind of on the fence and you've got two candidates you can't decide on, wouldn't it be great if you could see who actually won a couple games in the playoffs before you made your vote?
Yeah, that's always been kind of one of my complaints about the MVP, is that, you know, why shouldn't the postseason be factored in, right? Like, why is it, you know, to me, just mainly a regular season vote? Like, the playoffs is what you do it for, winning big games when it counts. Totally. Like, that's when it matters. You know, if anything, I would weight the playoffs more heavily than the regular season. So yeah, I've never understood.
I mean, how stupid is it going to look? Not stupid, but ridiculous. I don't know. If May wins the MVP, but he gets bounced in the first round of the playoffs, then it's just going to look like, was he really the MVP?
Right. Right. Exactly.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about this. So we know the playoff game. Let's look at this matchup against the LA Chargers coming up this week. And, you know, first of all, let me say, as a season ticket holder, hate the fact the game is on Sunday night. Hate the fact, you know, that I'm going to have to probably not bring my 8-year-old son. I'd love to bring him, but just hate the draw. But I do love the matchup, that the team they're playing, LA, coming out here. It should be cold on Sunday night. I think that is competitively a check in the right direction. But what I want to know today, Justin, is, you know, as we embark on this playoff run, number one, what your expectations are. And then number two, what are you most worried about going into this playoff run?
I would say that, you know, as far as my expectations, I would have to break it down, right? And I'd have to put some contingencies on it. Like, for instance, first off, I fully expect them to get past the Chargers. I know I've heard a lot of people saying that they expect it to be a close game, maybe a field goal game. I think the Patriots are going to beat them by a couple scores. That's just my personal feeling. I think the Patriots are a much better team. We've seen Herbert consistently turtle in these big games. I believe he has zero playoff wins under his belt. We've seen him absolutely choke in the playoffs. The Chargers have statistically the worst offensive line in the playoffs, AFC or NFC. And just the team in general has struggled in the playoffs over the years. They choke. So combine that with the fact that the Patriots are getting some guys back healthy. Milton Williams is back healthy. Robert Spillane should be back in the lineup healthy. Hopefully Karis Tonga, a few other guys. So I look at this and I say the bright lights on Sunday night in the playoffs, I'm expecting the Patriots to go out there and take care of business and beat the Chargers pretty handily. Now, as far as my expectations for the rest of the playoffs, you know, I'd still be lying if I didn't say that personally. I think the Bills are my favorite to come out of the AFC. Yeah. It just feels like it can be the Bills' year. I think they'll probably face a tough test against Jacksonville. But I think if they win that Jacksonville game, I would unfortunately pick them to go on and win the AFC. That's the team I'm most scared.
Just hold up. I'll push back on that a little. I mean, first of all, in the sense that I agree with you, the Bills are probably the most dangerous team in the AFC right now. And even though they didn't have the best regular season, they might be the team most equipped to make a Super Bowl run out of this AFC field. But when you talk about the Buffalo Bills, you're talking about a franchise that hasn't won a road playoff game in almost 35 years. And now they're being tasked to go win three in a row to get to the Super Bowl. That is a tough draw. Josh Allen has not won a road playoff game in his career.
Yeah.
And now he's going to win three. And as much as I agree with you, the Bills are the best team. The Bills, as the Patriots, they're probably the only team in this playoff field that actually frightens me. And I'd hate to see them again. But it's a huge, huge task to ask Josh Allen to win three road playoff games in three consecutive weeks, even for him.
I mean, I don't expect it to be easy by any means. I just look at it and I say, you know, it's in anybody that I would consider to be Josh Allen or the Bills kryptonite, a la, you know, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs or Joe Burrow in the Bengals, right? Maybe Lamar and the Ravens. Like, he doesn't have to deal with any of them, right? So it just almost seems like fate that the seas have parted and the AFC has given way, that he's the best quarterback left in the AFC. He's the most experienced quarterback left in the AFC. And this is the best chance, like road game or not, that the Bills, I think, have to make a Super Bowl. So I just feel like they're going to step up. And not only that, but, you know, I kind of take the same approach with Jacksonville that I do with the Chargers and Justin Herbert, that I do with Ramondre Stevenson. It's like, you know, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And to me, Jacksonville, I've been saying it, like, I still don't believe in Trevor Lawrence and that team. I'm waiting for them to come out and lay an egg. And I don't put it past them to do so this week.
So where does that leave the Patriots in the AFC then, Justin?
I think that leaves the Patriots in the AFC, in my mind, is the second favorites to win the AFC. And I think just the way the seeding plays out, I expect them to be in the AFC championship, because I think the way it would currently go is they wouldn't have to face the Bills until the AFC championship at home in Gillette, at which point, you know, I'll give a slight edge to the Bills, but anything can obviously happen. So I think the Patriots are the second best team, and I expect them at least to get to the AFC championship.
The LA Chargers basically tanked the game this week to guarantee that they would come to Foxborough next week. And I thought that was really interesting, right? The Chargers wanted to play the Patriots out of all the potential matchups that they had. And I say, why? Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head. They have the worst field that has shown that they might not be able to exploit that, because they have major issues getting pressure on the quarterback. So, you know, I don't sleep on this Chargers team. I look at this as a 50-50 game, because I think, in a sense, this is a bad matchup for the Patriots for that reason. I think Herbert was a talented loser. Look, Peyton Manning was a talented loser. Manning was the guy that couldn't only break through. So I worry about this game. I worry about the New England Patriots versus some of the other options. And I'm, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Chargers come in and win this game. I really wouldn't.
See, I would. I wouldn't. I know it's football. I know it's the playoffs. I know everything can happen. But, you know, it's just so much to me that, and maybe this is, you know, this is just bias that I have against the Chargers and in Justin Herbert, but I just don't. I don't expect them to come here and win. I really don't. And, you know, not for nothing, but I think this Patriots team is, and I know you do too, I think they're very for real. I don't buy into the whole easy schedule. I think their defensive line, you know, has been really beat up. You know, you look at injuries to Landry, Tonga, Barmore, you know, in a couple others. And it all is hopefully, you know, coming together for this divisional round. I just see it as the Patriots are going to take care of business. I do. I don't see the Patriots being a fake team, which I know a lot of people are saying they are because of their schedule. I think they are that much better than the Chargers.
I mean, I think one of the other things that would be interesting to see is Justin Herbert injured because, you know, he was hurt and he didn't play great coming down the stretch either. So they rested him last week. Are we going to see a better Justin Herbert this week? Or are we going to see the guy we saw the last 3 or 4 weeks?
Yeah. Well, that's true. But hey, I don't want to overlook the fact that the last two times we saw Herbert in the playoffs, he absolutely crapped all over himself and he was perfectly healthy. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
So he's got a habit of doing that.
He's the vice president of the Talented Loser Club.
He is. He did it against the Jaguars and Trevor Lawrence, right? Figure. The only win Trevor Lawrence has in the postseason is against Justin Herbert, yeah. Right? And he
did it. Loser bowl, exactly.
And he did it against the Texans last year, and so it's actually quite fitting because you know I got a little beef that with a couple of my buddies who there's a few of them that really like Justin Herbert. They think he's good. And we always give each other crap back and forth because I always say Justin Herbert is a fraud. He's awful. He's this, and that. He's so fake. And I can't understand why they like him so much. And I've been saying to them for the last couple months, I kept saying, if the Chargers make the playoffs, I don't care who they play. I'm putting the house on their opponent. I said, I wish I could blindly bet now against them in the first round of the playoffs, whoever they wind up going against. And fittingly, it's the Patriots. So I couldn't be more excited. I've been so out in this Chargers team for a long time.
You know, Pete, the thing with Herbert is that people fall in love with arm talent. That's the thing. He has arm talent. So like, you know, does he have some of those intangibles? I think that's kind of up in the air, but the guy has arm talent. People love arm talent, you know?
They do. And he does have it, but I think he lacks a lot of the other intangibles that are needed to really make a deep postseason run.
All right, you didn't answer my second question. What is the one thing you're most worried about going into the playoffs?
The one thing I'm most worried about going into the playoffs is honestly, I'm worried about injury. That's the one thing I'm most worried about going into the playoffs because I think that when this team is fully healthy, they can compete with anybody. But they got a lot of guys on both sides of the ball now who are either injured or fighting through injury or working their way back from injury. And we just don't know how reliable they're going to be for this playoff stretch. And, you know, you can really quickly go from being healthy and having depth to being in trouble. So injuries, that's the thing I'm the most worried about.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the thing I'm most worried about is the lack of turnovers and big plays on defense. Like that has been a recurring theme all year. And I feel like in the playoffs, those big plays can really change a game. So sacks, interceptions, fumbles, this defense has been good. They really haven't made a lot of those kind of super big plays this year. So that's the thing that worries me the most going into the playoffs. Are they going to be able to make those kind of plays?
Yeah, I mean, I guess when it comes down to it, I would like to see the Patriots get a few more turnovers. Maybe being healthy heading into the playoffs on that side of the ball will help. But, you know, really, if they can just, I think it's for me, it's less about the turnovers and more about minimizing scoring. Because I think if you can hold your, I think you have the type of offense that if you can be holding your team to, you know, 20 points or less in the teens, something like that, I think you're going to have a chance to win every game. Because I think it's going to be very tough to stop this Patriots team from putting up points.
Fair enough. Let's move. Anything else you want to say about the Pats? Or should we move to around the league?
Yeah, let's move to around the league.
All right. Biggest story around the league this week, by far, has been the firing of John Harbaugh by the Baltimore Ravens. Justin, we called it on the podcast last week. I don't think anyone should be surprised. The thing I find really interesting about this is, you know, when I heard the news that Harbaugh was fired, I go back to that contract dispute from last preseason, right? And how the Ravens were so sluggish to, like, not interested in signing Lamar Jackson long-term. I think that came from Harbaugh. I really do. I think that came from Harbaugh. And I think there was a Harbaugh-Jackson rift in that organization the last 2 years. And when we talk about something being rotten and something not being right with that Ravens team the last couple seasons, I think that's what it was. And I think what happened on Monday was really the fact that the Baltimore Ravens planted their flag on Lamar Jackson's hill, that they chose to side with the franchise quarterback versus the coach. And we'll see how that works out for them over the next couple of years. You know, the Patriots, they went with the coach. They sided with Belichick over Brady, and it burnt them. And it was one of the biggest mistakes in the history of pro sports. What will happen with this Lamar Jackson thing? You know, time will tell. Jackson may be on the decline. You know, I think that's something a lot of us are speculating, but the Ravens are all in on him and kicked that away. John Harbaugh, who is one of the best coaches in the league and will have a job next year if he wants one.
Yeah, and what you just said, I think, is one of the first things I wanted to hit on, which is, you know, for a very long time in this league, I feel like John Harbaugh was regarded as one of the better coaches in the NFL, arguably one of the top coaches in the NFL, you know?
No question about it.
So, he's Super Bowl pedigree. He, for the longest time, he had a winning culture, a culture marked by toughness and grit, great drafting, et cetera. And he always just seemed to get the best out of those Ravens teams, hard-nosed defenses. I think the firing of John Harbaugh is going to be a huge mistake for the Baltimore Ravens. I think some team is about to get their version of the Patriots and Mike Vrabel next year. I think he is still a very good head coach. I heard something the other day where it was like there's 6 head coaching vacancies right now, and he's been contacted by 7 teams since being fired. So, you know,
yeah.
I think that just speaks volumes to what the rest of the league thinks of this guy, right? And, you know, I know he had a couple shaky years, but let me tell you this. At this point, I have way bigger questions about Lamar Jackson than I do about John Harbaugh.
Well, that's just it. And that's what makes this move so interesting is that, like, you know, Harbaugh is a terrific coach. And, I don't think Lamar Jackson, and I know that he probably could have and should have won MVP last year, but I think you can start to see subtle signs of decline in his game already. And I've said this 1,000 times on this podcast. Not everybody is going to age like Tom Brady aged.
Right.
In fact, only one person has ever done that, and that's Tom Brady.
Yep.
Most quarterbacks don't make it to 40 or 40. Look at Aaron Rodgers at 41. He's a shell of himself. You know, I always give Russell Wilson is a great example. What's Russell Wilson? He's like 35 years old,
right,
and he's been washed up for 3 years. You know, he had a great career. Cam Newton fizzled out in his early 30s. Like, I mean, most players don't make it like Brady made it. So Lamar Jackson, I think, is 30 years old, 29 years old. That's young. But who knows what his timeline is? He might be one of these guys that declines earlier because his game is so built on his mobility, even though he is a great passer. And the Ravens just planted their flag on him and kicked Harbaugh to the curb. Now, I will say, like, if other side of the coin, if you're a coaching candidate or you're looking for a job as an NFL coach, that Ravens job is also super desirable because it's ready-made to come in and win. You have, I think, a franchise quarterback still at this point in Lamar Jackson, and you're going to have an opportunity to win a Super Bowl in the next year or two if you take that job over. Now, how fast Jackson declines and where you're going to be in 2-3 years, is he good enough? You know, that will play out, but it's certainly an opportunity to take over a kind of ready-made program.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Look, you can't deny that the talent that there is in Baltimore. And you know what? Look, something clearly wasn't working, right? This is a team that, you know, going back 5 or 6 years has consistently disappointed in the playoffs, despite expectations, despite what they've done in the regular season. You know, there's just been something missing when it came down to crunch time. And so, you know, look, I understand eventually, you know, it falls back to the coaching. But I just think, again, you know, I'll reiterate and say that this is one of those firings that I think is going to work out really well for another team that signs John Harbaugh. And I think it's, you know, I think it's going to be a little sketchy for the Ravens, depending on who comes in and how Lamar pans out, like you said. I mean, the guy can barely stay healthy right now. You know, they have an aging, the whole roster can barely stay healthy. You know,
the whole roster is aging, can't stay healthy.
So, you know, like there's turnover coming in Baltimore. They're at the end of their win now window before they have to blow it all up, you know?
You know, I really do see a lot of parallels to the Belichick Brady thing. You know, I mean, even though they weren't quite as epic or as long, they never won a Super Bowl, but just like that coach quarterback divorce and the organization having to pick a side, you know, yes, you know, Jackson may be in the decline. Other side of the coin, if you really look at the last 2 years, was what Harbaugh had been doing, was it really working anymore? I mean, think of the blowing leads. Like, who blew more leads in the last 2.5-3 seasons in the NFL than the Ravens? They were blowing fourth quarter leads, like literally at a historic clip. I think back to that Pats game a few weeks ago. We talked about some of the egregious coaching mistakes that Harbaugh made, not giving the ball to Derrick Henry. I mean, that was almost Belichickian at the end, right? Like, I'm not giving the ball to Derrick Henry. Like, I'm stubborn. I do it my way. I'm the franchise. I'm the genius coach. I've been here for 18 years. Like, I'm not going to do the simple common sense thing. We watched Belichick do that kind of crap, like banging our head against the walls watching that for the last 5 or 6 years. So, you know, it seems like it's just one of those things where it wasn't working anymore for both sides. But it's going to be super interesting to see, like, where Harbaugh lands. And if this works out for the Ravens, or if Lamar Jackson is in fact cooked, you know, this could be just a franchise crippling move.
It could be. And, you know, like the one other thing that I don't think really people are talking enough about is, you know, when you're weighing out which one of those guys you side with and who, you know, you're shipping out of town, you got diddly squat for letting go of John Harbaugh, right? Like, you just let him go into the wind, into the ether.
Yeah.
You can't tell me a team like the Jets or one of these desperate franchises out there would pony up like 2 first-round picks plus assets for a Lamar Jackson, something that like you can use to rebuild and supplement like your aging roster, you know? So I look at it and I'm like, well, that was another reason why I think it's risky, is because you let the coach walk for nothing, but you could have got a haul for that quarterback.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. And we've seen in the last couple of years, you know, when teams aren't willing to cut the cord with that quarterback for whatever reason, a lot of these teams seem like they're getting burned by it. I mean, look at Miami and Tua, and there's a couple other examples in the league. Trevor, I mean, I know they're won a lot of games, but I feel like they won almost in spite of Trevor. Then because of him, he was the 27th rated quarterback in the league this year. So it's like, you know what I mean? So it's like when you play your bag and pay and you build a franchise around a guy that might not be up to that level of opportunity, you know, a lot of teams get burned by that. Let's talk very quickly, Justin, about another coach that was fired, and that's Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland. Again, I thought that was really not a surprise. Another guy that's super coveted. And like, I think this guy, 2-time coach of the year, you know, I don't know if he's a good coach, but what I definitely know for sure is that he kind of got a raw deal with a really bad franchise around him. And, you know, the rumor is he didn't want Deshaun Watson from day one. That move has been an anchor on that franchise, dragged them into the ground. They still don't have a quarterback on that roster. You can't win in this league without a quarterback. If you want to point the finger at the coach, you want to chop the head off the coach, go ahead and do it. But I don't care who's coaching that team. You know, the quarterback that they have, they're not winning it anything.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think he's a good coach. Obviously, just how good of a coach is still to be determined. But like you said, he got the total raw end of the deal in Cleveland. And he's another guy that I think is going to be, you know, highly coveted. I think he's definitely going to wind up with another job. And I think he's going to have a good chance to go prove himself elsewhere. You know, it's like you said, you can't win in the league without a quarterback. And this Browns team hasn't had a quarterback. I mean, you know, you can argue that they had Baker Mayfield's in, you know, but even Baker's not a Super Bowl winning quarterback. He's just an above average quarterback in this league who, even when he was playing for the Browns, didn't look fantastic. I mean, he had a good season or two, but you know, if that was the pinnacle of what this Browns organization has had, even predating Kevin Stefanski, it's going to be tough for anybody to come in and have success. So, you know, I think it's actually best for Stefanski that he gets out and goes somewhere else.
He's probably thrilled, to be honest with you, that he got fired, right? Because I mean, Cleveland is just a black hole. It's just, there's about 3, 4, 5 of them in the league, franchises that are just black holes, and Cleveland, for whatever reason, is one of them. And you know, the reality is, like, they push Baker Mayfield out the door. Mayfield is a good quarterback. Maybe he's not a great one. They brought in Deshaun Watson. That's it. That's at that point, it was a fait accompli. It didn't matter anything else. They set themselves up for disaster.
Exactly. Yeah. But
let's talk about a couple coaches that didn't get fired, because I think that's interesting too. And I want to start with your boy, Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. And look, I mean, I said this three times, I think, already this year. I'll say it again. Any other franchise in the NFL fires the coach.
Right.
The Bengals are the franchise that kept Marvin Lewis for 15 years.
Yep.
And it looks like they're keeping Zach Taylor for another year. I don't know if Joe Burrow likes Taylor. I mean, if that's a factor in it, I don't know. But I'm sorry, that Bengals team should have been better than what they were. I know Burrow got hurt early this season. That's not an excuse to be as bad as they were. They brought in a good backup in Joe Flacco. They should have been able to hang in there. They didn't. I thought it was a mess. Patriots played them late in the season. They looked like a mess in that game. I'm surprised Zach Taylor is back as a coach.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe I shouldn't be.
Well, that's the thing, right? How surprised can we be given the Bengals' track record? Here's the one thing I'll say about Zach Taylor is I'm not sold on Zach Taylor as a coach, but I also don't think he's the biggest problem that they have in Cincinnati, right? Like, let's not forget, like, you know, back a few years ago when Joe Burrow was healthy and they had an average defense, right, and an average offensive line, they went to a Super Bowl, right, under Zach Taylor. And you know, to me, the biggest problem isn't Zach Taylor. It's that front office. The front office refuses to put an offensive line in front of Joe Burrow. They refuse to go out and spend on that defense, right, to solidify that side of the ball. And, you know, something that I guess you can't really control, although you could say it's related to the lack of an offensive line, is the health of your quarterback. So when you don't have a defense, you can't protect your quarterback, and your quarterback can't stay healthy, you know, it's really tough to win games no matter who the coach is. So even though I don't think Zach Taylor is my favorite coach, I don't think he's a great coach, I'm not shocked they didn't fire him. And I do think they have bigger fish to fry than Zach Taylor.
Well, look, Justin, though, it's one of those things where, is Zach Taylor really the problem there? Probably not. Is he a bad coach? I don't think he's a terrible coach, but it's like the whole operation is growing stagnant. And sometimes you have to change things just for the sake of changing things. I mean, again, I would say the Ravens are a good example of that. It just happens. I mean, we just went through this with Belichick, the greatest coach arguably in the modern NFL era, but he had to go because it just stopped working. So I think that what Taylor is doing in Cincinnati isn't working. Now, if you want to say what is the problem with the Bengals organization, it is the ownership. It's a black hole. It's Arizona, it's Cincinnati, it's Cleveland, it's the Jets. It comes back to the owner of the franchise, why they consistently, you know, generally suck, and why those franchises are just, you know, absolute abysses in the NFL map. So, you know, is it Taylor's fault? No, but I do think 31 teams would have probably moved on at some point in the last 2 years. Taylor will be back next year.
I agree with that. And the other thing I'll say too is, you know, I think what's very interesting is, I think when you're a team that's weighing out whether to move on from your head coach or not. I think part of it is looking at who's available as far as who you can bring in. And it's like, we just talked about two guys that if I was running an NFL franchise, I would way, way rather have John Harbaugh or Kevin Stefanski as my head coach than Zach Taylor. So I would have thought that even against all odds, just having those guys available in the marketplace would have maybe prompted some change trying to bring those guys in, especially guys from in your division. You could have potentially poached one of those two. So yeah, I don't know. I would have liked to see them move on, but I'm not shocked they didn't.
I think the clear take home here, Justin, is never ever hire a head coach, an NFL team that's named after a president. That's the take home.
Yeah.
Zach Taylor. Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's quickly talk about two other teams in the Pats division before we wrap it up. I had a big thing with my friends this week about Aaron Glenn.
Yeah.
Who looks like he'll be back for the Jets. And it's like people have such a thing about a guy deserves more than 1 year. And that might be true, right? Maybe C does deserve more than a year. But if you're the Jets, I don't see how you could convince yourself that it makes sense to bring Aaron Glenn back. The team quit. I don't think I've ever seen an NFL team quit like I saw the New York Jets quit this year. We watched them play the Patriots. That was what their whole last month of their season was like. They just outright gave up. They went the whole season without an interception. First team in like 100 years to do that, which is like unbelievable. Isn't this guy a defensive coach? And just a total mess. They have the number 3 pick in the draft. They have a ton of draft capital and assets. They're going to bring in a quarterback. Why do you want to bring in a rookie quarterback with a lame duck coach that's going to get fired in week 10 if he doesn't produce? I think the Jets should just make a clean break, new regime, bring in an offensive guy who can develop the quarterback and move on from what I think was an obvious mistake.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. Again, I'll bring it back to some of the guys that are looking for new head coaching jobs right now. And you can't tell me that you'd rather have Aaron Glenn over them. I mean, you know, take it back to that Jets defense, arguably one of the worst defenses in history. Not only did that team quit, 0 interceptions in 17 Zero. Games, right? Like, even just by luck, a ball gets batted right. into the air or errantly thrown to a defensive back. Like, what are the freaking chances of that? So, you know, and not only that, but you defensive guys are supposed to be, you know, disciplined, I think, you know, high energy, like things like that. And it's just like, he's none of those things. This team totally quit. Their defense was awful. And I just, to me, he's a coordinator. He's a defensive coordinator. He's not a head coach, really. So, yeah, I think.
I mean, that thing we talk about all the time with like the guy who's a great coordinator, but he's just not built to be the head coach.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. That's a real thing. I mean, look at Josh McDaniels, I would say is the quintessential example of that. But I think Aaron Glenn, you're right, is another one. But, you know, I will say it again, you know, no, I don't care how lack of talent and traded a few players away. No NFL roster should look as bad as that Jets team did against the Patriots a few weeks ago. That was just like, I mean, I feel like a high school team could have put up a better effort. That was about effort and lack of effort.
Those guys were on the sideline planning their Cancun trip in a few weeks. Like
they might be on this cruise with me right now. Actually, I saw a few New York Jets on here. Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. They totally quit on this guy. So yeah, you know what? I think the Jets are going to be another team that's kicking themselves when they totally blow their draft capital and ruin another good young quarterback, knowing that there were some coaches like Stefanski out there. So, but that's the Jets.
I mean, isn't it just like the sun shines on a dog's ass? At some point, don't the Jets have to hit on a quarterback, right? Are they going to ruin another one? That's really going to be intriguing to watch. They're going to draft one of these top two guys, and are they going to ruin this quarterback too?
Yeah, and you know what? I really hope, you know, just for their sakes that Mendoza and Moore are off the board by the third pick, because I actually like those two guys, and I would feel so bad if they have to go to New York and be part of that as a rookie quarterback.
Right.
Like, it's just
you figure one of them will be there. I mean, I don't think the Giants going to take a quarterback. Maybe someone will trade. I don't know. But.
Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, whoever winds up going in getting the unfortunate short end, short stick to be the quarterback for the New York Jets next year, it's, you know,
Well, you say that, but like, is the Raiders any better? I mean, they're kind of a full pond black hole franchise too, right? Like, I'll tell you one thing, since it's totally tangential, but I can't see Mendoza working in Vegas. Like, that just seems like a terrible, terrible fit. Like, this kid is like a, you know, corn fed, wholesome, religious. It just, you know, in Vegas, it just doesn't feel like that's a good match.
No, it doesn't. But you know what? Look, if they bring in maybe like a Stefanski or a Harbaugh, and they got somebody like Tom Brady in the organization who can, you know, kind of be in the kid's ear a little bit, who knows? You know, who knows? But you're right. Those are two very tough assignments. I mean, look, we've seen a couple teams in years past, you know, that have almost been great landing spots for young quarterbacks coming in where you say, oh, you know, this kid is going to have a chance when he goes to this organization. But I totally agree. I mean, the Raiders and in the Jets, two of arguably the worst, if not the two worst spots where a young quarterback could go next year.
If this kid, it's time for this kid Mendoza right from the beginning, get a really good agent and get wise, and you go full Eli Manning, full John Elway, and you don't end up in Vegas and you don't end up with the Jets one way or the other. Like, you put your foot down, you do what Eli Manning did, and you say, absolutely not.
Yeah.
That's what he has to do. Yeah. And then, very quickly, and don't forget the Giants at two, and don't be surprised if they take a quarterback. I know everyone's all gaga about Jackson Dart, and I'm still not totally sold on him. I thought he showed some stuff this year, but he's got a little ways to go, in my opinion. If they had an opportunity to draft one of these two top guys, I don't know if I'd pass that up to keep Jackson Dart, just saying.
Yeah, well, I think one of the reasons why it could potentially work for them to do that is because I think at this point, you know, unlike some teams who, when they move on for a quarterback to make a move like that, you know, they don't have much value in their current quarterback. Like, Jackson Dart has value. Like, I think you could get good draft capital in return for giving up a Jackson Dart, because I do think a lot of the league views him as having potential and as being a potential franchise quarterback. So they're in a unique position where they can either stick with a guy that's shown positive signs and has potential, or they can move on from him and probably get their money's worth in that investment.
Yeah. It's a generational opportunity for the New York Giants at two to draft a top guy. And like, you know, are you going to roll a dart, or, you know, what are you going to do? It's going to be, I don't think it's set in stone. All right. Very last thing I'm going to bring up, Justin, then we'll wrap this up. I got to ask you about Mike McDaniel. You picked him to be the first coach fired back in August. Well, guess what? He survived the whole season. I don't know how. Is he a cockroach? Is he, I don't have some kind of amulet. I don't know how he did it, but he survived the whole season. If I'm the Dolphins, I'm moving on, but it looks like he's coming back.
I don't know. Some teams, you just question how badly they really want to win and compete. And the Dolphins are one of those teams for me at this point. I'm shocked he's still there. Now, the one thing you can say is that his team didn't quit on him, right? I mean, they actually kind of had an okay second half of the year.
They did.
You know, so he's got that going for him. But I'm happy as a Patriots fan. Good. Keep Mike McDaniel around. Yeah. That's great. But I just, I think he's been on borrowed time. He's certainly on borrowed time now, and I can't understand why he's still there.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem to make sense. I mean, you know, like, he is, again, classic coordinator, but not coach material. That's just it.
Yeah. Totally agree.
All right, so we'll wrap it up, my man. Just very quickly, prediction for this week. Give me a score, Pats, Chargers. Anything else you want to predict? I will fully hold you accountable for anything you say. Keep that in mind.
All right.
You're on the record.
Yeah, let's say I'm going to say 30 to 23 Patriots.
Okay. I'm going to say 21 to 20 Pats. But I think this is going to be a nail biter. I really do.
All right.
I think it's going to be a very close game, and maybe even an Andy Borgalis field goal at the end or something like that.
Okay. All right. Let's see.
All right. Well, we'll be back on Tuesday to break it all down. I will be back in blustery, freezing Boston on Saturday is the plan. So we will be able to record a regular episode without unstable internet connections and whatever else coming on. So we hope you all join us for that. But I want to thank everyone that listened to this episode of the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. Enjoy Super Wildcard Weekend, which they don't call Super Wildcard Weekend anymore, but enjoy the football this weekend, and we'll catch you next week with another episode. Be good, everyone.